Chapter 16. I sat in the dark of the cab's back seat, watching the double necklace of highway lamps we were constantly approaching. The tires whined steadily beneath us. The driver didn't speak. Stations drifted in and out of the car radio. Gospel, rock, a woman who advocated self-hypnosis. Somewhere near Harrisburg, a minister promised a salvation in a voice so sharp and reliable it rattled the cab, then went off on a tangent and became static, returning as Spanish music. When the driver made a highway stop near Philadelphia, I had him leave the motor running while I waited inside with the doors locked, the radio on. I didn't want to think about where I'd been or where I was going. I just wanted to stay in the dark like this, to doze and listen. By dawn, we had ridden out of Pennsylvania. The morning light was weak and gray. Dottie would be waking soon, discovering what I'd done. I hoped Eric was too sore to walk. Hoped I'd made him childless.
"So what you going all the way up to Cape Cod for anyways, lady?"
His voice came out of nowhere and made me jump. I didn't know why, exactly, but caught myself looking at the scratch on my wrist. "It's personal," I said. "I'm meeting friends."
"Whereabouts on the Cape we going, anyway?"
"What do you mean?" He reached over and turned off the radio.
"How far up?"
"Oh, near the ocean." His laugh was insulting.
"Lady, the whole place is near the ocean. Cape Cod is, you know, towns. Ain't you ever been up there?"
"Of course I've been there. Sheesh."
"Well, where are your friends at?"
We haven't decided where we're going to stay yet."
"Well, how are you going to know where to meet them, then?"
"Look, I just forgot the name of the place. It'll come to me. Don't have kittens over it, okay?" He smiled back at me in his rearview mirror.
"Okay, lady," he said. "Take your time. You got about another 9 hours to think of it."
Mist silvered the highway pavement. Miles and miles of mirror. I didn't want to think. "My friend told me you delivered a baby in this cab once," I said.
"Yeah, that's right," he laughed. "Don't remind me."
Pictures of saints decorated his visors. He'd stuck a magnetized plastic Mary to the dashboard and double-looped a set of rosary beads around the rearview mirror. Its tethered crucifix rocked back and forth, with the cab's motion. It lulled me to look.
"So I suppose you believe in God, right?" I said.
He braked and looked back suspiciously.
"Of course I believe in God," he said. "Jeez, what do you think I am? Don't you?"
"Yeah, right. God and the Tooth Fairy and Jiminy Cricket." He frowned into the mirror and shook a scolding finger.
"You shouldn't talk like that, lady. God takes care of you, and me both."
In the silence, we both lit up cigarettes. He smoked Trues. Dottie had said his name, but I couldn't remember it. It was a pattern with me, really, I thought. Dottie's fish. Rita Spite's baby. I killed off whatever people loved. It was entirely possible I'd driven Ma to it, too. Better off dead than living with a monster daughter.
"Your good friend God really took care of my mother," I said. "She got killed last summer."
He looked at me in his rearview mirror. I looked away. Out.
"Well," he said, "God has his reasons that you and me don't understand. But I'm sorry for you, though. For your suffering. You know, all these religious doodads you have hanging up in here. My grandmother has these things. All over the place, too. Her whole house is like a shrine. Says her rosary every night. Praise her head off. She had two kids, a boy and a girl. One drowned, and the other got killed by a truck. God had her go to both their funerals. What do you think of that? In the silence, I thought of Grandma's frayed prayer book, limp and soft from constant use, held together with a rubber band. Her turning and turning of the pages had transformed the paper into a kind of delicate cloth. In one way, it's sad, he said, but in another way, it ain't. Both her children are probably up in heaven, waiting for her. I rolled down the window and chucked my cigarette butt out, held my face to the cold inrush of air. Yeah, sure, I said, polishing their little halos, practicing their harp music. I closed my eyes and saw, intact, Ma's flying leg painting, the way it managed to be both airy and powerful. Maybe that picture was Ma's heaven. I stuck my hand inside the knapsack, fingered the swatch of canvas I'd managed to save. He said something I didn't catch. What? I said, would you mind closing the window? I'm freezing to death. The cab strayed a little over the center line. The thing is, he continued, you and me ain't ever been there, right? So neither of us can really say what heaven's like, or ain't like, 'cause we ain't dead. See? Maybe that was why I was driving up there. To kill myself. Rid the world of fat girl monster. I tell you what, I'll say a little prayer for your mother. Don't waste your breath, I muttered. I ain't wasting it. I guess I better say one for you, too. I shifted my weight. My legs and bladder ached. I'd been cramped in this cab for 5 hours. You want to pray so much? Pray that a gas station shows up soon, will you? I need to go to the bathroom. More miles of grimy road went by. I've been up there once, he said. Where? Heaven? Cape Cod. One summer when I was a kid, I got a cousin lives up there, my cousin Augusto. His mother and my mother come over from the Cape Verde Islands together. Two young girls, didn't know nothing about nothing. Can you imagine that? Couldn't even speak the language. I would have preferred radio talk. I couldn't have cared less about his stupid family tree. If I killed myself, who would they call? Grandma? My father? Dead or alive? I didn't want Daddy anywhere near me. Augusto runs a fishing boat out of Provincetown. I tell you, lady, that's work. Commercial fishing is. I was about 14, 15 that summer I was up there, pulling nets, pulling lobster pots. Everyone at Merton would be talking about me. My blood would be on Eric's hands, on Kippy's, too. He put on his blinker. What are you doing? I thought you had to go to the toilet. I do. Where are we? Perth Amboy. Where's that? New Jersey. We're getting there, lady. The ladies' room was bubblegum pink, littered with used paper towels. I scowled at my reflection in the smeary mirror. Fat monster face, I said. Fish killer. Sitting in the stall, I looked again at the scratch across my wrist. Studied it. Then felt down there, to where I'd let her touch me and put her mouth. I should have stolen that scalloped-edged knife, brought it along with me. I closed my eyes and imagined myself bleeding, collapsing on that sticky pink floor, dying justifiably in the stink of shit and disinfectant. She had loved those fish. Had said she loved me. Do me first, she'd said. Then come so hard it shook the bed. Was that love? What was that? The coffee shop had racks and racks of plump, glossy doughnuts. I'd gone in only for a map, but got into the bakery line. After all I'd gone through, I didn't deserve a couple of stupid donuts.
Next,
the counter girl said. Her eyes widened at my fat. Large coffee, cream, no sugar, and a dozen donuts.
What kind?
She snatched a tissue paper and waited. Let's see. 10 lemon-filled and, 2 cinnamon. She shot the donuts into a bag and ran up my total.
$1.95,
she said. Hold on. Make that 2 large coffees. I grabbed a newspaper and a map of the northeastern states from the rack. Plus these. She rolled her eyes at me. I kept wrecking her cash register math. When I got back to the cab, he was dozing, head back, mouth open. I had a perfect right to wake him. I wasn't paying Pedro here $400 to take a siesta. I stood there holding his coffee and staring at his sleeping head, as if it was a piece of sculpture in a museum. I hadn't realized before that he was handsome. Hadn't paid any attention to that sort of thing. I imagined myself touching the tips of his feathery eyelashes, his bristly, unshaven cheek. I reached in and placed his coffee on the dashboard. The steam clouded the windshield, the air around his plastic blessed virgin. Back inside the coffee shop, I ignored people's second round of gawking and walked to the empty end of the counter. I'd bought the newspaper hoping for something about those whales I'd seen on TV. The article was buried on an inner page. Humpbacks, they were, beaching themselves off some place called Wellfleet. The folded open road map took up 3 counter spaces, counting mine. What did I care? I was a paying customer. Cape Cod began near Plymouth, Massachusetts, and stuck out into the Atlantic Ocean like an old lady's bony finger. We'd studied Plymouth with Mrs. Nelkin, my old teacher from Connecticut, who scared me. We'd made construction paper pilgrim's hats and marched around the school. It was the Indians who taught the pilgrims to plant corn, she said, so they could survive. Planted one whole dead fish for every scoop of seed. Dottie would have done something with those fish by now. Flushed them down the toilet? Buried them in the backyard? Her big mistake was loving me, the monster. I should have spared the fish, drunk the Clorox myself. Buzzard's Bay, Barnstable. I'd waited and waited for Daddy that afternoon in Mrs. Nelkin's class, but it was Grandma who finally came to pick me up. Anthony Jr., strangled by his own cord. I tried to imagine what Grandma would say if I killed myself. What she'd feel. A mortal sin, that's what she'd call it. For the rest of her life, she'd pray for me. Imagine me roasting in hell like a rotisserie chicken at First National. Only I wouldn't be in hell. I'd be in dirt, rotting away like Ma. Because God was something people made up. A lie people told themselves. I looked inside the bag. 2 of the lemon ones were already gone. My mouth burned with sweetness. I traced my finger out to the tip, Provincetown, where that relative of his lived. Then drew back a little and found it. Wellfleet. I folded up the map. Augusto. I knew his cousin's name, but not his. In the newspaper article, a scientist said any number of conditions could be causing them to do it. Scrambled sonar, parasites in their inner ears, some primal instinct to seek land, or some reason nobody really understood, a scientific mystery. There were 2 pictures, one of that expert, and one of 3 dead whales lying on the shore in a row. The paper said 11 had killed themselves so far.
The snippy woman who'd waited on me came out from behind the counter carrying an English muffin and a Pepsi. She sat down two stools away, sighed to herself, and lit a cigarette. Someone else was at the register. Outside, my cab driver was up, awake, talking to a gas station attendant who was filling the tank. I hated the way he called me lady, like I was somebody grandma's age. But it seemed stupid to introduce myself at this point. We'd traveled together all night. In a way, having those saints in the car was a kind of comfort, no matter what I did or didn't believe. I caught the waitress looking at him through the window, checking him out. She was skinny and harried-looking, with limp, pinned-back hair, unimportant in every way. But the lie swam in my head. Her believing it became crucial. "I see my sleepyhead husband's finally awake," I said, nudging my chin in the direction of the cab. "That's him out there, the guy in the red jacket. We're going to Cape Cod on our honeymoon. He'll have kittens if I don't get out there with his cinnamon donuts." She looked down at the size of my leg. Then she looked out again. "You wouldn't think someone like me would end up with someone like him, would you? But it happened. He's a cutie, isn't he? We're very much in love." She sat there, blank-faced. I had upended everything she knew. "He prefers me just this way," I said. "Says there's more of me to love." "And love me he does. Phew." I dipped my finger into some lemon filling that had plopped onto the counter, brought it to my mouth, and sucked. She got up off the stool, leaving her cigarette burning in the ashtray, her Pepsi and muffin untouched. "You have a nice day now," I said. "Nice talking to you." Outside, the air felt cool and clean. He smiled when he saw me coming. "Was you the good fairy?" he said. "Thanks for the coffee. Here's some breakfast, too." I held open the bag of donuts. "Nah, that's okay. Go ahead. I don't have leprosy or anything. Oh, by the way, my name is Dolores." "Well, you're a nice lady, Dolores." He looked in, chose a cinnamon. "So what's your name, anyway?" "Who, me?" "Domingos." He laughed. "What's that? Spanish or something?" "Portuguese. Cape Verde Islands. Remember?" "Oh, yeah, right. Wherever they were. In school, I had always thought geography was irrelevant." Back on the highway, I watched the back of his neck. It was the exact same color as the coffee I was sipping. I began another donut. If I reached out and touched that neck, he'd probably have an accident, drive us right off the side of whatever bridge we were crossing. "Can I ask you something?" I said.
"Sure."
"How old are you?"
"Me?"
24. "Oh, I thought you were about that." Halfway across the bridge, traffic slowed, then came to a standstill. "What bridge is this, anyway?" "I'll give you a clue," he said. "Wooden teeth." "Wooden teeth? Father of our country? Dollar bill?" "How old would you say I am?" I asked him.
"You?"
"Jeez, I don't know." He looked into his rearview mirror. 26? 27? It's hard to tell." "Why? Because I'm so fat?" He didn't laugh. He didn't say a word. "I am 27, I lied.
"You're right."
"You give up?" he said.
"George Washington.
The George Washington Bridge. You ever been over it before?"
"Not that I know of," I mumbled.
"Well, now you can say you have."
"Are you married or anything?"
He laughed.
Me? Nope. I ain't married.
Were you ever?
I almost got married once.
What happened?
Oh, it's a long story.
What does that mean? She dumped you?
No, it means I don't want to talk about it.
Okay, fine. Excuse me for breathing.
I finished my donut.
Try the cinnamon.
I imagined us crashing through the chain link, falling to the water below. I shivered from the sensation.
By the way, I remember the name of the town I'm going to. It's Wellfleet, I said. That's where my friends are meeting me.
I know where that is, he said. That's pretty far up.
Hey, that town was on the news last night. I seen it on Huntley Brinkley. These crazy whales keep heading for the shore and killing themselves. Nobody knows why, except me, that is.
I held my breath and waited.
Yeah, I got that whale problem all figured out. It was that guy walking up there on the moon, see? That Neil guy, that astronaut.
The weekend of Ma's death. Mr. Pucci and me on the couch, sitting numb before the TV.
One small step for mankind. He screwed everything up, that guy, even those poor whales. Then he laughed. If you ask me, that is.
Miles went by. Time. New England and East. Welcome to Connecticut. My stomach felt nauseous every time he slowed for a toll, tossed a quarter into the exact change basket. It should have been me, not Ma. Next month would have been her 39th birthday. Old Lyme. Mystic. Fisherman's Cove, next exit. I wondered if old Lady Massicott was still alive, still drinking Rheingold beer and buying boyfriends. I tried to remember her dog's name, that fat, blinking cocker spaniel who loved cookies.
I used to live near here, I said, when I was little.
If you can imagine that, me, little.
Hey, he said, I was thinking of stopping for a sandwich, maybe, stretching my legs a little. It's almost noon. You want to stop somewhere near here?
This is the last place in the world I want to stop, I said.
The second to last, really. In another hour, we'd be driving past Easterly.
Okay, he said. You're the boss.
But it was a good memory that returned, full-blown. A prize I'd won in fourth grade for reading more books than any other kid in my class. A glass paperweight. Inside it, a scene. A tiny Swiss girl. Heidi? Waving in front of a cottage. It snowed when you shook it. It had sat, displayed, on Mrs. Rickenbacker's desk for weeks. Everyone in the class had wanted it, even the boys. When I got my award, I'd had to go up on the auditorium stage with Mr. LaRose, our principal, who was crippled. I trembled and looked down at the kids and teachers applauding. His excitement was what woke me.
So she says, "Hurry, hurry, get me there. I can't wait."
I opened my eyes.
What? Who?
The lady that was having the baby. I'd just been thinking about her. We got halfway to the hospital and she started screaming, "Stop, stop." I thought she was yelling for me to stop, see? But after it was over, she tells me she was talking to the baby, talking to her own pushing. Next thing you know, the cab's up on the sidewalk and I'm saying Hail Marys and there's all this water and blood and I pull the baby, well, you know, right out of her. This beautiful little girl. All three of us crying. 'Cause it was, you know, kind of scary doing that. I sat, dazed, listening. But, you know, a miracle, too. Me and this lady I ain't ever seen before, and this new little baby, this miracle.
I leaned forward toward him.
Can I ask you something? Don't ask me nothing about babies, he laughed, because that was my only experience.
That summer you were staying at Cape Cod with your relative, did you ever see a whale?
A whale? Nah. I seen a dolphin once, though. Ain't they cousins with whales or something?
This little dolphin swam right alongside the boat, keeping us company for miles.
Had a face like he was smiling at you. I kept throwing him mackerel until Augusto got mad. Told me I was bad for business. But anyways, that's my story about delivering the baby. What do you think of that story, huh? Remember you was asking about it before.
I shifted and closed my eyes again, too tired to fight the drowsiness.
You woke me up, I said.
I lay half awake, half asleep, listening to the sound.
Yoo-hoo, Domingos called. Hey, sleeping beauty.
Behind his voice, the thump of water, smell of ocean. Fumbling, I sat up and opened my eyes, squinting in the bright sun.
What time is it?
It's 3:30. His answer scared me.
I thought you were going to stop for a sandwich.
I did, 2 hours ago.
We were in some parking lot, amidst cars and pickups and looming banks of sand.
Where are we? He laughed. Route 6? Where the fuck is Route 6?
Take it easy. You had yourself a nice long nap, been sleeping over 3 hours, he said.
Route 6 is the Cape Road, goes all the way up.
Hey, listen. You know those dead whales I told you about? I stopped for gas down in Orleans, and a guy told me another one got stuck this morning. Right on this beach here. Come on, let's take a look. I'll help you up the dune.
I shook my head. I'm paying you good money to take me to, what do you call it? Wellfleet. I don't appreciate surprises.
That's what I'm telling you. We're at Wellfleet. Come on and see that whale.
I don't want to see it, I insisted. Who died and made you boss?
Well, I'm just going to have a look then. A short one. I ain't going to come all the way up here and not see in person what I seen on TV.
I pulled my arms across my chest. I was the first to look away.
Fine, I mumbled.
Suit yourself. You will anyhow.
He shut the door.
Just a quick look, that's all, he said.
I watched him hustle up and over the sandbank. Each of his steps left a funnel-shaped dent. An old man on a bicycle drove down the narrow road and parked hastily, hurrying up the path like he was late for an appointment. A helicopter chugged in the sky. CBS News. It dipped down toward the ocean, its bottom half disappearing behind the steep dune. There was another TV station van parked in the lot. I lit a cigarette, drew in, held the smoke in my lungs. I thought of Ma's accident on TV that weekend. Her wrapped-up body being loaded into an ambulance on a stretcher. On the hour. Over and over. Two middle-aged women appeared at the rise and walked down the path toward me. They stopped at a nearby car and poured sand from their sneakers.
I don't know. I just can't fathom it, one of them said. Then she laughed.
No pun intended. After the helicopter flew away, the parking lot took on an eerie quiet. Sand ticked against the cab in the wind. Over the dune, the ocean thumped its rhythm. The smell of fish and salt was stronger when I opened the car door. I stuck my feet out and got my bearings, lifting myself off the back seat. My legs felt stiff. One foot was asleep. Climbing the dune was like my dreams,
running from Jack Spite at a plodding, dangerously sluggish pace. When I reached the top, I was out of breath. Its mass was what threw me first. A black rock ledge of life. My hands fanned out, and I fell back against the cold sand. My heart pounded from the climb and the sight of it. The whale lay surrendered on its belly, its head pointed out to sea. Most of its body sat stuck in shallow, red-clouded water, but the massive black tail reached up onto the beach. Incoming water lapped and channeled around and over it. The larger waves broke against its face. Seagulls walked the whale's back and rocked in the water around it. 20 or 30 people, most on land, some in wetsuits in the water, watched and talked and circled. 2 men jabbed at its side with an oversized syringe. Electrical wire ran from TV equipment to some humming machine perched in the front seat of a Jeep. The ground was strewn with people's stuff. Domingo saw me and waved, hastening up the dune toward me. Wind whipped his hair and jacket. He looked shaken. "Why don't they do something?" I said. "Try to push it back in or something." "Too big." "They could at least try, instead of everybody standing around gawking. Jesus Christ!" He shook his head. "It's dead, Dolores. Died about an hour ago. Some of these people been here all day with it." But it wasn't dead. From out in the water came noises, clicks and sighs and heavings, the sounds of despair. The gulls rose off its back and into the air. On the shore, the spectators jumped and shouted. The whales living had taken us all by surprise. "Dios mío," Domingos whispered to himself. He took me by the hand. "Come down," he said. "Come see." I pulled my hand away. "I don't like this," I said. "I want to go." Out in the water, it grunted loudly and writhed, then suddenly mustered the strength to shift itself onto its side. "Whoa," we all said together, as if some miracle was about to happen. Its colossal tail scraped against the wet sand, carrying along a trail of it in its sweep. Its stiff flipper pointed straight up in the air. A miracle! As if that flipper was a wing that could lift it back out to open water. As if its other flipper weren't lying crushed and folded beneath its weight. It fell back on its belly again, cracking against the water, raising side walls of white spray. The huge muscular tail thudded up and down, up and down against the beach, so thunderous in its suffering that the vibration reached up into my throat. I clapped my hands over my ears, trying not to hear or feel that thudding. "I can't... get me out of here," I screamed. Domingos was down the bank, halfway between the whale and me. The others stared up at us. He ran back, took my arm, and guided me away, back down the bank toward the cab. He put me inside, sat next to me, whispering comfort, wiping at my tears with the palms of his hands. The motel we pulled into had a crushed clamshell parking lot and a dead lawn bordered with rocks painted white. They gave me the room next to the soda machine. Domingos brought in my knapsack and the donut bag and asked if he could use my phone to call his cousin. He had apologized over and over about stopping to see the whale. My behavior had made him afraid of me. I sat on the bed, smoking, as he yacked on and on in Spanish or Portuguese, whatever it was, in a happy tone of voice he hadn't used once during our whole trip up. Honeymooners. Ha! What a pathetic fucking joke I was. "Okay, that's all set," he told me. "Augusto's wife's already frying up the linguica." "What's that?" I said. It's sausage, he said. I ain't had any in... Your cousin sounds nice. I'd really love to meet him. His face went scared.
Oh, well.
Not now. I meant sometime. Did you think I meant right now? God, I was just trying to be polite.
Oh, he said. Right. And plus, you got those friends you're meeting, right?
Yeah, right, I said. If they ever find me. He laughed, embarrassed, and moved backward toward the door.
Well, he said, I guess I'll see you then. I enjoyed meeting you and, you know, talking to you. Sorry about that whale.
Yep.
I looked at the wall, not him.
Thank you very much for those donuts you bought. And that coffee. No problem. Don't forget now. I'm going to say a little prayer for you. Saint Anne, I'm going to say, you help this lady out now, 'cause she's a very nice lady.
Yep, I said. Thanks.
You have a nice vacation now, if that's what this is, a vacation. Don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out.
The wall decorations were dusty metal lobsters and faded pictures of ships. The bedspread had cigarette burns. Inside the nightstand drawer were a complimentary pen and three postcards. Vacation dreams begin at the Coastal Dreams Motel. I went out to the machine and got a soda. The sun was going down. The sky was orange and pink. The TV only got two boring stations. I watched the end of some old movie. Golf. I kept changing the station over and over around the dial. But all I got were those two channels, or snow. I had spent half my life watching TV. I thought again about the paperweight. I'd had it less than a week when I shook too hard and accidentally sent it flying across my bedroom, where it hit the floor and cracked, leaked, became useless. At the time, it was my biggest tragedy, breaking that paperweight. The worms go in, the worms go out, the worms play pinochle on your snout. A song Jeanette and I used to sing. And then the pus comes oozing out. Mrs. Nord would get mad when we sang it and make us stop. I lit a cigarette and held the tip to the musty bedspread, made a fresh burn. I could smash the drinking glass and follow the line of the scratch I'd made. Cut deeper. Or use the curtain cord. Strangle myself like Anthony Jr. Suddenly I saw my brother's discarded baby furniture on the pile at the dump that day with Daddy. Felt in my stomach our wild escape away from there, Daddy, in his anger and loss, gunning the pickup truck over ruts and bumps. I'd looked back and watched that shrinking pile of furniture Anthony would never use. Saw again the pile of my ruined belongings that Eric had made. I'd lost the painting. Lost everyone. I snuffed the smoldering bedspread cloth with my thumb. I was afraid to die in this ugly motel. When I reached inside the donut bag, I found 300 of the $400 I'd paid him to take me here. I began to cry. All my life, the best people left me. Just drove away. I didn't want to die. I didn't want to live, either. After dark, a car pulled into the parking lot. Not Domingos, like I'd hoped. A man and a woman in their 30s. In the glow of the soda machine, I recognized him. The scientist they'd interviewed for that newspaper article. The man with all the theories about whales. "You want anything?" he called to the woman. "I don't know, Fresca, I guess. We still have vodka left, right?"
"I think so."
The cans clunked down.
He walked toward her and handed her her soda.
"Oh, man," he said, "I'm exhausted."
She reached behind him and touched the back of his neck. A gesture so natural, it filled me with aching.
"Plus you've had zilch for sleep," she said.
They walked to a room 3 doors down from mine and went inside. Postcards. Suicide notes. I lay back on the bed and tried to decide who to send them to. Grandma? Domingos? The one I really wanted to write was Ma's. "You didn't deserve what happened. I did." I thought of that photo of Ma and her friend Geneva's suite, the one on Grandma's stairs. The two of them, happy and young and pretty, their arms locked forever. I pushed myself back up and wrote 2 of the cards against my leg. "Dear Grandma, I just couldn't take it anymore. When you remember me, try to think of me as a person, not some big fat mortal sin. Dear Geneva, you've never met me, but I feel almost as if..." They sounded stupid, so I ripped them up, lay back again, closed my eyes. In the dream, Jack Spite and Eric and Daddy had me out on the ocean in a rocky boat. It was snowing. Thick snow, a blizzard. I'd never seen snow on the water before and wanted to just sit and look. But they kept leaning over, jabbing at my feet with the edges of their oars. "Cut it out!" I yelled at them. "Stop it!" I jumped into the dark, choppy water. Then I was swimming beside a baby dolphin. Fast and smooth, we glided. The snow had stopped. When I looked back, the boat was far away. The dolphin's face looked familiar. Then he wasn't a dolphin anymore, but a little boy with a dolphin's smile. Dottie's little dead boy. He swam away. I woke up thirsty. The office was closed, and I'd used up all my change. The sink water tasted warm and poisonous. I didn't like touching that slippery drinking glass. "Dear Grandma, tell my so-called father I don't want him at my funeral. I don't want him anywhere near me." I didn't want to write. I wanted to talk to someone, some person I hadn't failed, someone who would listen. I could walk down to that door, knock, wake up the scientist. "Excuse me for bothering you. You don't know me, but..." Or I could just go ahead and do it. Stop those nightmares. End it. I picked up the phone. The Cape Cod information operator talked to the operator in California, who said there were 3 of them, Brian Sweet, MJ Sweet, and Irving Sweet. "Irving," I said, "get me that one." It rang and rang. Her voice sounded far away. "Wait a second," she said. "Tell me again." "Bernice's daughter," I said. "Bernice, your friend who died, her daughter." I reminded her about her telephone call after the accident, when she'd had Grandma put me on the line so she could tell me how much she wanted to meet me, how the bottom had fallen out of her life when she heard the news. She'd sent flowers to the funeral home, white gardenias, the biggest, most beautiful spray. "I've saved every one of her letters," she told me now. "We wrote on and off all those years. The night I heard about it, I took them out and read every single one. I know one thing. She loved you very much." She waited for my crying to stop. She told me to take my time. She asked me how I'd been, what I was doing. I was in college now, wasn't I? I told her it hadn't worked out. Was I calling from Rhode Island? From my grandmother's?
I said I was calling from Cape Cod.
Cape Cod? She said. It's cold up there this time of year, isn't it? What in the world are you doing up there in November?
Oh, nothing much, I said. I watched myself in the mirror as I spoke, twisting the ends of my hair with my finger, watching the way my weight sunk the mattress. The crying had slitted my eyes.
Just trying to think, I told her.
Think about what?
Oh, lots of things. Death, for one. I saw this whale die today. I'm staying at this place where whales keep dying.
There was a pause on the other end.
Tell me some more about my mother, I said. She talked about Ma and Daddy's wedding, how my parents had been so crazy about each other, how Ma had prayed to get pregnant. She talked on and on. Her letters the last couple of years, though, honestly, they just broke my heart. First the divorce, then her breakdown. It seemed like every time she'd get back on her feet, she just seemed so vulnerable. If I did it, I thought, I'd be free. Of myself. Of all those Jack Spite nightmares. I used to invite her to come out here all the time for a little vacation. Have a few laughs, you know? A little R&R. The worms come in, the worms go out, the worms play pinochle. I sang it more to myself than to her. Her conversation was beginning to bore me.
Dolores, honey? Is everything okay with you? You're all right, aren't you?
I have to go, I said. There's this pinochle game. I laughed out loud at my joke.
Honey, does your grandmother know where you are?
I hung up on her. Rich bitch.
I walked and walked down the unlit highway, then down the twisting narrow road, dodging headlights, waiting in the brush when I heard cars. The road went on and on, but I didn't mind. I felt energized, ready for anything. Fat girl on a skinny road, I thought. It struck me as hilarious. I knew this was the way. I'd followed the sound of the ocean. There were two cars in the parking lot. I climbed the steep dune, stopped at the top. The ocean looked silvery in the moonlight. The wet air had a stink to it. Already she had begun her sweet rot. Two men stood below, holding hands and watching her. Their dog kept barking at her side. Down the beach, three people sat huddled in front of a driftwood fire, each of them facing her. I sat above, on the crest of the dune, apart and waiting. Two teenage couples arrived, slamming car doors, laughing and swigging beer as they ran down the dune toward her. Their loud fun sent the other spectators away. The boys climbed up and walked her body, out to the face and back. They bent and sliced their girlfriend's souvenirs. People came and went like that. Like Ma's wake. I outlasted all of them. A chaperone for her corpse. I stayed with her all night. At dawn, I stood up and looked down the beach as far as I could see. One side, the other, the parking lot behind me. The two of us were all alone. I walked down the dune toward her. The tide was further in than it had been the afternoon before, though she hadn't moved. She was deeper into the water. At the ocean's edge, I pulled off my sweatshirt, pulled down my jeans. The water was no colder than the wind, but my nipples hardened against the sensation at my feet. My fat turned goose flesh blue.
I waded out to my knees, my legs aching, then numbing to it. I went further in, to my waist. The end of my hair was wet. I lifted up and under. Swam. From the beach, she had looked black, but now, swimming beside her, I saw that her skin was mottled, blotched with darker and lighter grays. I reached out to touch her. She felt firm and muscular against my palm, my shaking blue fingers, against my lips. The kiss felt soft and coarse, salty. I swam underwater to the front of her and resurfaced, bobbing and treading water. I was weightless. Her massive head and snout were covered with knobs, ugly, patternless bumps littered with barbed chin stubble, sharp to the touch. Her scarred mouth gaped open, as if she'd died trying to drink her way back to safe, deep water. Her jaw, half above the surface, half below, was lined with thick broom bristle. Her eyes were underwater. I held my breath and went under, my own eyes open. The eye stared back at me without seeing. The iris was milky and blank, blurred by seawater. A cataract eye, an eye full of death. I reached out and touched the skin just below it, then touched the hard globe itself. This was how I could die. This was where. I fought against myself, my head butting downward toward bottom, arms pushing and flailing to stay under. I drank seawater in thick gulps and swallows, glimpsing the death eye in the midst of my battle. Then I fought it, angrily, burst upward, crashing the surface. I coughed and spit, gasping and choking for breath, letting the good air burn my lungs. I swam to her other side, around the torn and broken flipper. My feet touched bottom. I stumbled and waded back toward the shore, hit again by the full, throbbing cold. My clothes sat in a wet heap by the water's edge. I struggled them back on. I had reached some kind of end, but hadn't reached it. I don't know how long I sat there, shivering. From far down the beach, as far as I could see, it approached. First just something to look at, then something to hear. A jeep. The wet clothes, the wind, made my shaking uncontrollable. A man in a tan uniform cut the engine and walked toward me, smiling. He squatted down beside me. "Hello there," he said.
"Hello.
Would you by any chance be Dolores Price?" I nodded. "Some people been looking for you. They been worried." He had plump little yellow teeth, like a row of sweet corn. I told him I was sorry. "I got a blanket for you if you're cold." "You look cold. Are you?" I nodded again. "Then let me get that blanket, then." Back at the jeep, he talked into his radio. "Okay, she's here," he said. "I got her."
Part 3. The Flying Leg.